You are listening to Let's Go JoJo, the weekly JoJo's Bizarre Adventure podcast from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. Dwayne.
Hello.
Niall.
Yo-ho.
And me, Brian. This week's episode, episode 22, Yoshikage Kira Just Wants to Live Quietly, part 2.
For a guy who wants to live quietly, he makes a lot of noise at his
He's doing
hour.
A poor job of it.
Particularly when he's killing the noisiest character in the show.
Just watch for silence.
So first part of this episode is Kappa Yamaguchi screaming blue murder. I thought I was watching an episode of One Piece where Usopp's taking a beating.
Quick question. Can the people only hear the explosions if they have stand powers? Because other than that, there's a lot
I'm
of questions.
I'm thinking it must be the case because this explodes outside a classroom. And with people there...
People are in that corridor when it happens.
Like, someone gets vaporized in an explosion. I think there must be some stand-related effect that only stand users can then witness.
It's a weird kind of things. Also, spoilers.
Yeah.
Didn't say who gets vaporized.
Yes. I think this is a part of the story where you could probably tear it apart quite easily and find loads of loopholes.
I mean, like, basically, if there's ever anything where you question, it's like, but that doesn't work based off the prior things we've seen or how I know how the real world works. You can just go stand powers.
Yeah. But it's also, why aren't you using your stand powers in that way or this way?
Yeah. I mean, like, that could be down to character stupidity, to be fair.
Yeah. So basically, we left it last week with Yoshikage Kira telling Shigichi that he's going to kill him. And this is exactly how he's going to kill him. I've got a stand power. I am the serial killer doing all these things, but you're not going to get to tell anybody because you're going to die.
I did like the opening picture of this one because it's super, like, creepy. It's, like, got this weird kind of skull face. And then it's like, no, it's got a cat face.
Strange cat man wearing underpants.
Yes.
It's like a boxer, like a Greco-Roman looking dude. It's pretty cool.
Well, design. It's got skulls everywhere else on it, so that makes up for it.
The buckle and everything, yeah.
And yeah, so Shigichi's like analysing his stand power, saying, you got a powerful stand, you've probably only got a 1 or 2 meter range, but I'll cut your throat if you take a step forward.
And the dude's like, there are other stands?
Yes.
There are different abilities?
They're
I didn't know any
stands.
Of these. Yeah, exactly. It keeps getting called, was it Deadly Queen?
Yes, Killer Queen is the...
obviously, yeah. What he's saying out loud. So yeah, Koichi has his harvest.
Sorry,
I don't know why he said Koichi.
Another small gentleman whose name ends in Chi.
Shigechi has his harvest all over him and his stand. And he's like, I'll cut your... thingy artery, carotid. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. I read that in a manga once, kind of thing.
Yeah, that was very. I am a teenager and I have learned something, and I'm going to tell this adult the thing I've learned.
Yeah. While Kira's basically like, but you don't know what my stand's power is. I also have superpowers. And it's like, check it out. And his stand pulls out money out of its pocket, I guess. I'm not exactly sure where he got it. Mm-hmm. And I figured he was going to do the thing, like, and I assume that's the thing from the rat hunting episode. I thought he was going to flick it at him using kind of super strength because we've learned that's a way a short range stand can increase its range, you know?
Yeah. It seems to always the way that, you know, for a lot of them, the default setting for these stands is a fast punchy guy.
Fast buff dude who punches good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That seems to be the basic superpower.
Yeah, it's like, you know, for like the main character and possibly main villain, the ability belt would be like fast punchy guy and one other thing.
I think it's like comics, like, you know, like it's like flight, super strength, being able to do some variation on aura is the version.
Mutant
here.
Eating factor, Olympic level athletes, genius level intellect. Yeah, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Being able to aura is the equivalent here. Although he says something now, and I can't remember what Killer Queen says. He just says like one word though, instead of multiple of the same word. Damn it!
But he doesn't flick it though.
No, because Koichi's stand. One of the harvests managed to grab it, which was the wrong thing to do in this case. Because his power is anything his stand can touch, he can turn into a bomb.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then he sets it off with his stand's thumb, like he has a little activator thing on it.
Yeah. The item in question that he took off him was, oh, it's 100 yen coin. What's this all about? And it explains, oh, Killer Queen can do this. Click. Like right now, like just click and then kablamo. And we see quite a visceral explosion happen. He's torn to pieces, seemingly.
Yeah, it looks like his face is torn straight in half. And then we get the intro, and I was like, holy fuck, that's how you're going to open?
The end. Short episode this week, so.
Oh, yeah, pretty much. There's not much of the that arc in this episode. Mm. Most of it's another short arc, and then the start of the next arc.
Keratin sees him, oh, God, that takes care of business. Dust off hands. Oh, wait a minute, smoke is cleared, and seems that one button didn't finish him off somehow, but he is quite injured. His face is all mussed up and everything.
He says, like, okay, it blew your face in half, and also it mussed your brains into your face, and things like that. And I'm like, I don't think it did that much damage, but it clearly fucked him up. Like,
yeah,
it's not looking well.
Yeah. Remember also, this is a child, a middle school child. He's like,
yeah,
13, 12, maybe.
Yeah.
He's having a really rough day. But he manages to. Manages to distract him anyway, and it was just someone like Carapace, and he kind of gets away, you know, because a big mastodon appears and excludes his vision for a moment, and then he sees, well, Kira sees, oh, he's gone now. And one Harris is kind of scamper around the corner, it's like, oh, he's gone around the corner, I'll go get you now. And he stalks off that way, but actually, she gets yet. Not even dive into the bushes. He's like dive to the side of the bushes there, and then had Harvest gather up leaves to make a bush around him.
Yeah, I thought that was a good use of it. All right, yeah, that was really kind of cool visual.
Yeah,
and that as he's trying to crawl into the the way, like primary and secondary schools,
he's in middle school. He is,
but it's the same school. But it's just like there's two different campuses on it. Is it you call it?
Yeah.
Two different buildings. So he's trying to sneak into the window, trying to find Josuke, who can heal him, and the Harvest just barely like pulling him up through the window and giving him a boost and that kind of thing. And I was just like, holy crap, he's really messed up.
Yeah, I was thinking why he wouldn't do the whole tank tread thing from before.
Probably just because he's wrecked. Yeah,
why? Because he's very injured.
Yeah,
there's someone to the school. He's covered in blood, and he's like, no, and you know, people are stopping. He's like, oh, what's up with this kid? Oh, he's a middle school kid. We should probably tell the teacher. Nah, it's just him alone. He's creeping me out.
No, he's creeping me out, man.
He's covered in blood.
Those girls are fucking assholes. I just gotta say, who didn't like? Oh my god, let's call the nurse in the nurse's office. It's like, no. Fuck that weird pointy-haired bleeding child.
Let's let him stumble down the hallway there, and which he does, and he arrives just at the door of the classroom, where he's peering through the glass in the door, and it's like, oh, Josuke and Okuyasu are still out in there. If I can just open a door and get inside and sort this all out, but if we can even do that in the reflection of the glass, you just carry out the window. And he's like, oh, I wouldn't do that if I were you. So Josuke and Okuyasu, you know, they don't know who I am, they haven't seen my face. So you're just you, and I can't let you be telling them that you've seen me and I'm the murderer, because how else will we have a quiet life?
I think Kira's got Dwayne.
Oh no.
We've lost him.
We didn't even hear it.
Oh, I did. I heard too little. Get the callback things.
Your stand powers are more powerful than mine. I didn't even notice it. Didn't witness it.
Yeah,
he's gone forever.
The listener will be hearing that as well. So he's he manages to get the button to the lads.
Yeah, well, we say by this point that Killer Queen has touched the doorknob of the classroom door and turned that into a bomb, and Jigechi is, this time for real, quite graphically blown to pieces. But yeah, the guys are inside and they're like, what's that, some noise outside there? And see the little Harvest come in, it's got touching the button that says, I found you, blah, and explodes in blood. It's like, I think there's something coming wrong with Shigechi. Let's go, better go check on that guy. Because, you know, that stand there exploded in blood. It didn't disappear like normal. So maybe we should probably... I got a bad feeling about this. Probably go find him. Yeah. But now a trace of the little guy left. every atom of him is has been blown from existence. But a while as it's happening as well, across town, Rei Mitsumoto and her dog, the little ghost girl, yeah, see Shigechi's screaming spiritual form rocketing into the heavens, like yowling in pain and terror.
And there's a great bit after that when everyone, basically all the non-really evil stand users sort of get a flash that it's happened, and then it cuts to them all at the alleyway.
Yeah. It's like, wow. Like, Rei knows that one, okay, oh, he's been killed again, or she's killing again, because that's exactly how I died, and I know it's him. I saw Shigechi's soul rocketing across the heavens there, screaming in agony. Like, it does take some kind of guts, I'd say, on Araki's part that, you know, first of all, this is like a young boy who's just been killed. And secondly, they're not doing like the precious memories bit, or, you know, remember the good times with Shigechi, you know, wouldn't even give him like an identified end. No, let's see him, you know, let's see his ghost, you know, just screaming in the sky, breaking open to pieces, you know, like clearly in supernatural pain.
Yeah.
You gotta see every stage of this happening to the poor little guy.
I think it's Josuke and Okuyasu's reactions to the death are the thing which really drives it home, I think, in their sort of teenage inability to properly know how they're supposed to feel about this.
Yeah, they feel sad and angry, but they don't know which one to follow.
Yeah, and Okuyasu hasn't got a brother anymore to explain it to. He can't explain it to his dad because his dad doesn't understand. Mm. And obviously he's not very good at explaining things in the first place.
Yeah. Well, it's not even something like, you know, I'm dumb, I don't understand it. It's just, I need to go for a walk. I need to go home. I'm not feeling right. This is like a new sensation for me that I'm not quite able to process. I just need to go home and think about this for a while.
Yeah,
so it's just me thinking, I know, but...
And they give the button to Jotaro. Mm. And he's going to investigate.
Yeah, because they've established now, Joseph butts in saying, okay, now we definitely know it's a thing, so maybe
Jotaro
should probably pull her away a little bit more.
Yeah, we weren't interested when this ghost approached you and told you she'd been murdered. That wasn't quite supernatural enough for us. But now there's stand users involved.
Yeah.
And, what's his face? The one who first brought up how stand users are attracted to each other. He mentions it again, yeah. Because everyone's sort of explaining what they're going to do next.
Yeah, Tony was going to this. I'm going to warn all my customers, you know, at the restaurant, and we'll look out for this guy. There's somebody on the loose. And similarly, at Dr. Tsuji's salon, she's going to say, well, he's probably not going to come by my place. No, it's a beauty salon, but you never know. I'll put the word out as well. Yeah, there's a kind of a more, a very forlorn kind of mood over everybody. They all go to separate ways. Josuke just brushing past Kira on the street, not knowing that, oh, this is the guy who just vaporized your young friend. So
instantly proving the Hellstand users run across each other.
Mm. Well, it also seems to be a busy crosswalk on the main street, so maybe it just happens that way.
But also, there was a huge pile of stand users all standing next to each other. So it may have
several magnets.
Increased the chances of them running into
it. Resonating.
But he knows who Josuke is, but Josuke doesn't know who he is.
Yeah, he thinks, no need to tangle with him. Oh, I've got enough scot-free as far as I know.
Yes, and so. I've got to get this jacket fixed.
Mm.
I've lost the button.
Yes, and while I'm waiting for that to happen, I might like have a spy like my next victim. You know, and he's like already killed one person today. He's already like on the hunt for another one.
Yeah, this was a very Shonen Jump, women right type episode, though, wasn't it? It was like...
Are we supposed to sympathize with him? Because it's like, yeah, that woman he's going after to murder specifically and date her hand is kind of a dick.
She's got an ugly soul, but a beautiful face and hands.
I don't think that deserves death. It seems a bit extreme.
But, like, that's probably going to come up. Like, you know, I'm performing a civic service by getting rid of all these, like,
yeah,
Because he
ne'er do wells and miscreants right. in the world.
Because in his head, he's describing her as being worse than he is.
I don't think she's murdered anyone lately.
No.
She's going to pawn her boyfriend's ring.
Purify her by killing her and chopping her hand off.
And then dating her hand to the point where it starts to smell.
Yes.
And then going like, sorry, baby. And it's Splitsville. As he does just there and then.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. A little explosion inside his pocket.
The rules of these explosions appear to be very specific.
Maybe it's more like an implosion. So it's like a tiny little bomb planted inside, like inside the hand. Just goes, just kind of crumbles down.
Well, that did seem to be the case with your man. It didn't damage the corridor he was in. It just turned him into dust. So, yeah.
And then 4 days later, Koichi runs into Jotaro, and he sort of follows him around, asking questions.
Yeah, and I suppose it's the first time we've allowed Koichi to speedwagon about Jotaro. It's kind of like, yeah, Jotaro is kind of weird and awkward to be around, isn't he?
Sure is quiet, not saying anything.
It's like, hey, we're going to do the thing? It's like, yeah. You looking for the murderer? Mm-hmm. Okay.
I don't know why everybody's always ragging on Jotaro for not being this kind of like character full of depth or whatever. Like, if anything, I like these little moments where he's just, you know, keeping himself to himself, and he's just trying to make you do a bit of legwork, you know, just trying. And he's not one of those guys who feels the need to explain everything, a little thing. He just says, yep, yeah, okay.
I think Koichi's idea of complimenting his jacket was actually pretty good, because no one wears badges of that size that they don't want to be complimented on their fashion sense, right?
Yeah, and they could kind of set square on the left shoulder.
Exactly, yeah.
I guess he's a scientist, he might need to do some calculations.
So what's the deal with the dolphin on your head, Jotaro? But no, he's become distracted by the fact that a cobbler does minor clothes repair. And it's like, oh shit, I was only looking for tailors. I never thought to look at other places like that. So I think Koichi also points out a grocery store that does electronics or something?
An electronics store that sells flowers.
That was it.
Are these like robot flowers or are they flowers that are little kind of cartoon face them, and then when you clap they move around and sing a song?
It's a small town. People need to do multiple businesses.
It's probably about the time of the singing electronic fish booms. Maybe that's
got to be
something similar. Yeah.
No, electronic fish was boom is a lot later than this. But it would be the right time of the when it was set.
So it was weirdly...
Added that. Maybe that was a revision they've added, like the N64.
Yeah, okay.
We've got to add Big Mouth Billy Bass in.
Great. But no, wasn't on sale here. No, was on sale here. Just some information, please, about a customer you might have.
Yeah, and you get one of those kind of character dudes, you know? The guy will keep you talking in the shop rather than just do business. It's like, oh, yeah, I know everyone's name. So do you know his name?
That's his name. Oh, ah. Well, I could tell you.
I have it written down.
I'll go read it.
How do you read again? I've forgotten.
What's his name? How do you pronounce these letters?
I must
not be Japanese, but... I don't know how to try it. What's this crazy moon leverage here?
Like it was weirdly like similar, because I was trying to buy a cane there this week, and I went into one of those kind of old man shops run by a very old man, and he kept like, it's like, do you know those collapsible canes? Do you sell those here? And he's like, oh, I have one of those myself. We don't sell them here now. I need it for walking. I've no trouble walking now. I have trouble breathing. I took it to Spain with me. It was great. Have it in the car now. And I'm just like, fucking.
And you've already left.
Yeah, it's like, you don't sell them though, right?
Oh no!
This is where you need smoke bombs, Dwayne. Just throw down a smoke bomb and run out.
Oh, if only. Yeah. But yeah, I felt the lads' frustration. I wasn't even searching for a murderer, so you know I wasn't even in a rush. But yeah.
Yeah. So as he's doing this, his hand gets blown off by a tiny tank, which is crawling over him.
Perfectly normal sentence, but yeah, that's what happened. A kind of cool, like, I guess it's like a heavy metal looking toy tank.
Yeah, which is then as the our heroes are going, what's happened to the guy's hand? And the guy's going, what's happened to my hand? The tank is going, look over here.
Look over here. It was me. It was the tank. Look.
Turn
look
this way.
Don't right do here what it says. Don't do what it says.
I figured if you look at it, it gets to shoot you. But then I was like, well, then how did it shoot that dude who can't see it? I did like the terrified look in his face when he could clearly feel and see the tank treads rolling across his shirt. And I was just like, oh, God, that's horrible. dear.
Yeah, this thing zipped around and it all went with that little diversion. And see, George Harrow, look, someone's taking a jacket from, you know, this kind of very, trying to consume success from behind the door. It's kind of very ineffectively kind of tugging at the sleeve. It's kind of breathing.
Yeah, and Jotaro notices that it's tugging it weirdly, and he's like, wait a minute, that tank is... he's trying to get us to get closer to the tank.
Yeah, which is now in the guy's mouth.
Yeah, it jumped into his mouth. The dude is very distressed, obviously. Mm. The tank is still trying to get their attention.
Yep. It's supposed to be like, you know, a secondary power of Killer Queen, because it's Kira there in the wardrobe in the closet trying to, you know,
yes,
after he's got, obviously it's kind of bullshit because you got, I got a stand that's got its own little mini stand that's not on not on.
Well, he's a villain and him being cheap does make sense.
Yeah, and hey, Koichi's there as well, who's a guy whose stand is evolved forms.
It didn't evolve that well though, to be fair.
Well,
like, check it out. Now it's a little buff, dude.
It changed from, like, a little lizard thing with wheels.
Oh, egg noises first. It was an egg first.
Oh, that's right.
Egg,
it was an egg first. Yeah, you're right.
Egg, then, little whistling with wheels that makes noises, I'm all of you.
And then a little buff dude with a tail.
That can, you know, use sounds to then alter reality around it. Like, that's pretty OP, all right, yeah.
If you're creative, yeah. I think it's one of those ones.
And then there's a guy whose dad just developed being able to stop time.
Well, he's just so fast.
Because he saw somebody else do it.
Well, they were kind of related.
So, yeah.
That's okay, because it falls under the image of fast punchy guy with one other thing.
Yeah, you're allowed fast punches and then one other thing on top of that.
Like, Kenshiro's a fast punchy guy who can kill you, but also he has the power to heal you. He can cure blindness with that.
Yeah. He's quite like Josuke there in that regard.
Yes.
So, we left on a cliffhanger as we go into sheer heart attack next week.
Yeah. Well, it goes to the cliffhanger. It's like, okay, this little tank thing on the ground. What's this thing going to do? I don't know what's going to happen with this thing. What's this whole deal? And it's just go, to hear tick, 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 tick. Just peering at this ring cover, tick, 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 tick.
Yeah.
And then only when it ticks down and saying, that might be a bomb. Koichi, get down.
Kaboom. The thing I was thinking at the start of this episode, I mean, like, what a fucking opener, but should they have ended the last episode on him exploding his face?
Possibly, but I don't think they could have fitted it in.
Yeah, yeah. That probably would have made it too tight in the last episode and not given enough room in this one. Like, it would have to be stretched out, you know?
We can have 2 weeks in a row where it ends with an explosion.
I guess that's true, yeah. It'd be a bit samey.
Because you're going to see a lot of explosions from here on out, obviously, with Kira being involved. You can't be doing it every week.
Yeah, yeah. You gotta be careful about your explosion use.
And do you think it was right to... I think it probably was right to move Yukako Yamagishi's vision of Cinderella before Shigechi getting killed. Because it seems a bit weird for him to get killed and then we run into this other story.
Yeah. It's all lighthearted romance, yeah.
No, I mean, like, in terms of, like, pacing, that's a lot better. I think it was, maybe it was one of you guys, but someone was saying, like, that was good to put this earlier in it. And rather than, because shit's going down now. We don't have time for this fucking around business.
Yeah. And also, it introduced Dr. Tsuji and her salon earlier on. It was like, gets involved later on with Kira as well. So it's good to establish her then and there. So we're a bit more familiar with her and what her whole deal is.
But yeah, effective episode. Sorry, I think I really liked Kappa Yamaguchi's performance as Shigechi. And I think the music, particularly in towards the second half of it, really played a good part of carrying the story along.
I mean, like, so far in the series, they've been really good at using the musical, musical kind of stings of basically like using Kira's theme. The dun 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 dun. It's just like he's about to murder someone.
Yeah. Also, the again, omen of doom that is the Morio radio station.
Yes. Oh dear.
Anytime I hear that little jingle, I hear all.
No shit's going to
go down. Dead now.
Yeah, it's weird. I think I'm in a similar place to Okuyasu, where I was like, am I angry that kid got killed? And I was like, yeah, pretty much, because it's like, he was a little shit, but he didn't deserve to die.
Yeah.
A big explosion.
Also, he was a child.
Like, yes, that's the main thing, I suppose. Yes. Oh, dear.
And I like the bit at the end with Koichi and Jotaro being a pairing. So I think we've seen that so far, have we? And you really get the idea that from him sort of telling him not to rush off is that, yeah, Jotaro is the guy who's got the most experience fighting enemy stand users.
Well, that, and he knows what happens every fucking time in the prior one where they all rushed into it.
Yes.
It's like, every time. Of course, he was paired with some of the stupidest people we've ever seen.
Just the one stupidest person we've ever seen.
Well, I was talking about Joseph and Polnareff.
Okay.
Yeah. So this may be me, the guy who can stop time for 10 seconds should be probably around a bit more.
Yeah, he does have the best power. Or at least, he's the only one who's, we've seen, like, his little power chart change, in that its developmental potential is gone, because it's like, it's fine. It has enough fucking superpower at this stage. It's like, but what else can he do? It's like, he knows everything he can do. That's what makes him so great.
It can draw really good.
Okay. Next up, it is the return of Dragon Ball Super, back from the Olympics. I want to meet Son Goku. See a summon from the King of All.
That's the translation of it, but when it's like the King of All's little verbal tick, where it all sense of it, see, but it kind of sounds like some kind of Chicago mobster. I want to meet Goku, see? Yeah.
Maybe they'll do that for the English.
Maybe that's where his temple is. We don't know for sure. So, yeah, Beerus is very worried still. He summons Goku. Says, you've got to go and see the King of All. He wants to see you. I don't know why. Wish you take him. I don't want to go.
Yeah, if he can avoid going to the boss, he'll avoid it. Yeah. And he's really worried because, and it's weird, he's a god of destruction, but this guy can blow up all of reality if he feels like it. Like, don't piss him off. Are you going to wear that? Seriously?
Yeah.
Like, you know, he's really...
Whatever you do, don't tell him anything about Black Goku and the Time Machine.
It's like, oh, don't look like the kind of guy who's just going to blab and give away secrets. Yes. Yes, you do. So don't do it.
How long is it going to take them to go there by normal means?
2 days.
2 days.
Basically. I'd imagine 2 days back again, obviously.
Yes, because, you know the Supreme Kai, he can get you there. But look after him, because if he dies, I die as well.
Yeah,
I did like Whis revealing that he's the guy who's the blabbermouth, and Beerus is like, dude, don't fucking tell him that. Goku straight away is like, oh, so I just have to beat up the fucking Kai to beat you up. That's pretty easy. Yeah, it wouldn't be any fun, though. Beerus is like, motherfucker. Oh, dear.
So they go to see the Kai.
And the Kai starts freaking out, and all the other guys are just like, dude, be on your best behavior. And he's like, what? Do I look like I'm going to be rude? And they're all like, yes.
Yeah. Also, again, is that what you're wearing? We're just going to say we gotta get here in a hurry, and he didn't intend to change.
Those are the nicest clothes he has, to be fair.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Zamasu and Gowasu are still 1,000 years in the future looking at that dinosaur planet.
I think those dinosaurs are doing great. I don't know what the hell he's talking about.
Yeah, and he gets mad and kills one when it attacks them.
Yeah. Karate traps him in two in cold blood.
And Gowasu and Zamasu have this talk about tea and your feelings and the purpose of good and evil. It's supposed to be a choice. You can't just go around killing all the evil people. You've got to give them a chance to become good again.
I think he's basically saying that the purpose of gods is to maintain the balance so that it's neither good nor evil wins out, but that good strives against evil.
Yeah, and evil has the chance of becoming good.
And it basically, the dude's like, no, I'm just going to do good. It's like, no. That's for, like, humans to fucking decide. And it's like, yeah, but I'm going to decide it because I'm a god. And it's like, no. Gods help humans decide that. And it's like, you should not fucking listen to me.
This problem to Earth, it's like, okay, we got, like, a long array of cases now for rehabilitation. We got Piccolo, we got Vegeta, we got Majin Buu, we got all these guys. It's fine.
You got Goku's father-in-law, for fuck's sake.
They're in a different universe, though. Maybe the people in Universe 10 are...
Oh, they don't have Earth. Yeah, that's true.
Bunch of, well, they probably do have an Earth. Yeah.
I'm thinking of Universe 7.
Yeah, 6.
Yeah.
Because the main one's 7.
Yeah.
Champers is 6, which now does have an Earth because it got wished for.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and then we also get the gang working on the time machine. They get that finished off and polished.
I mean, like, how many episodes would this have taken back in the old Dragon Ball Z? It's like, oh, we're finished the time machine already? Holy crap. What, we're not going to train anymore? You're just going straight to the future? Okay. Wow.
It turns out the King of All wants a play date with Goku.
Which is amazing, because it's like everyone treats him with like such respect. But it's like, Goku's the only guy who's like, hey, kid, how's it going? You're all right, kid. And he just finds that really refreshing.
And is it like the Great Priest, the new guy?
Yeah, the High Priest. Yeah.
He looks like a short wit.
Yeah, seems to be from the same race.
Mm. And Goku is excited to fight him because he's informed he's one of the 5 strongest people in all universes. And he's like, let's just say I'm Whis and I'm great and I couldn't beat him. And he's like, oh, brilliant. He's like, don't fucking fight him. Don't say you want to fight him. That's really fucking rude.
You said that he's stronger than you. No, I really want to know. Oh, oh man.
You're just waiting for Goku to like mess everything up. And I thought he did an excellent job until he told that massive fib we found out about later. Where it's basically like, hey, the King of All is like, hey, can we play? And he's like, I got some shit to do back on my planet, but I'll totally come back here. I know a dude who'll totally be up for this. And he's like, and the King of All is like, yeah, that sounds great. And they're like, who are you thinking of, Goku? And he's like, I don't know. Do you know anyone fun? It's like, what the fuck? I thought
it's gonna have to be Vegeta.
I mean, logically, it would be Vegeta because he's the worst person you could pick.
I would say smart choice would be to bring the wee baby Pan because she'd be up and playing around with a small creature. Yeah. Also, she's strong enough to probably be able to keep up on him, so I'll be good. She's going to beat her trunks, so it's just.
And that may lead into explanation of why she's like entering the tournament, the World Fighting Tournament at age 4 later on.
Brilliant.
Yeah, so while Goku's training with Whis and Beerus, Pan's training with the King of All.
Well, not training, having played it.
Yes, played it. But for her, it's probably going to be training.
Oh, yeah. I can
quite a
kid this thing.
But I mean, they're going to not want it to be Vegeta, which is why it should be the funniest thing for Vegeta to go.
Yeah, that would be a good terrible
pick. But yeah, I think you're right, it could be Pan as well. Because it would just upset Beerus so much as well, the very idea that Vegeta was going. He's going to be like, the universe is going to be destroyed.
Yeah, he's going to... I mean, like, if he wasn't a hairless cat, he'd lose his hair over this. I did like the King of All, a lot of the bits with that where, like, everyone's freaking out. The Kai's basically having a panic attack on the ground. Because he's so like, oh, God, he's going to kill us all, isn't he? The guards are about to, like, mess up Goku, and he's like... And the King of All turns around and is like, I'll fucking erase you. And they're like, oh, sorry, boss. We thought he insulted you.
The kicker is when like they get back to Beerus' planet. It's like, okay, how did it go? Oh, I don't know why you're so uptight about the King of All, Beerus. He's a pretty nice dude. Like, you know, old King of All Chan. He's a nice dude. It's like, King of All Chan. Oh my God.
That was pretty great, yeah.
Then at the end, they all hop into a time machine and travel to the future, where Goku is attacked. Presumably because they think he's Black Goku.
Yeah.
Nice disguise, Goku Black.
Here, eat these 5 missiles.
And then next week, Super Saiyan Rose.
Rosé. Well, it depends what the accent on the E is. Tradition or not for us.
So are they just going to cycle through Super Saiyan colors now? Because that is a good marketing strategy, I must say.
They got beer, they got whiskey, and we move on to the wine now. We have the rosé, Super Saiyan Bordeaux, Super Saiyan Riesling, Super Saiyan Chardonnay.
Oh, dear.
Down the mindless.
This is such a good show.
Yeah.
It's pretty fun. It's kind of like fun at the max level. It's not really, yeah, it doesn't really have any of the filler. Like, you know, it's just all the good stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and the fights are in there. Like, I would argue that for the most part, the fights are probably at the same quality as anything that was in the previous serious series of Dragon Ball. It's just that they're a lot shorter and more condensed, which is better. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah. No, definitely.
Also funnier. And used for sitcom purposes. Because you can get a good fight. Well, oh, we got to put this costume on Beerus so you can put it in front of Monica. You've got to fight Goku. It's like, oh, we can better not find out. And then you get an awesome fight out of it as well.
Well, then they had like a whole lot of episodes of very serious fights and a lot of people standing commenting on the sidelines. And now they're just fucking having a laugh with it. Everyone, yeah. Including everyone in the show, knows the format of the show.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, we'll just all stand back and comment, right?
And it's going to have inter-universe tournament, you know, pretty straightforward fight in there, but also lots of lighthearted, humorous bits in there.
Yeah. Lots of, especially like when they kept changing the rules as they went along,
yeah.
You know. Because that's fighting tournament good stuff.
Like, this is a Dragon Ball that can do both, you know?
Mm.
Next up, episode 8 of Banyanya. Banyanya and the Stray Cat Nya.
Yeah, I have some questions.
In which Banyanya's trying to go to sleep. The cat appears at the window.
Oh, the Banyanya falls asleep because it's hot. It's warm out. And so does the commentator.
Yeah, the narrator falls asleep. At this point, this reveals just how much we rely on the narrator to make sense of the various characters' intentions.
Exactly. Egg-fucking-exactly.
Because it's basically a version of when a cat sees another cat the other side of a window, and they, like, have a staring contest. You can't. It's like, what is the cat's intention? Is he trying to get in to eat the banana?
I assume the cat was evil just from the look of it, but it's impossible to tell.
And is Banana trying to stop him from getting in, or is he trying to let him in?
And he eventually accidentally or on purpose hits the blinds.
Yes,
and then goes down. Like, "Oh, cat's okay. Gone. I'll fall asleep."
And then the narrator wakes up. And he's like, oh, but now I was asleep. What's been happening while I was asleep?
I didn't miss anything, huh?
No wonder he's spent so many fucking years documenting these things. He's awful.
So, like, okay, so gotta get bananas. They are cats living bananas, though. They don't come from bananas. They like, go into bananas of their own accord. But what we've seen, this regular cat, this looks completely different. So...
Well, it's not in a banana.
No.
Yeah. So, do they evolve to shrink down to fit into the banana, or...
Are they a particular variety of cat who live in
bananas? Are they a particular variety of banana that grow cats?
Who we never see, because they're hiding in bananas all the time.
Do they come from this planet? What do they want? Do they mean us harm? What can it teach our civilization?
Yeah, it's a strange show. But yeah, I like Seko Boys. It begs various questions of the viewer, which I am sure the show is never going to answer.
No intention of it.
But as a form of humor, that is a form of humor I enjoy.
Completely non-explained randomness.
Not because there's obviously rules.
Random isn't the right. No. Yeah, there's obviously like a system in place.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's
random
just
isn't the correct term.
The purpose and the meaning behind the rules is. Not revealed to us, so much like life. Maybe that's what it's trying to tell us. Maybe we're the banana. Maybe we're the cats in the bananas.
Oh, I already cat. I said I'm going to look in. then you'd be more privy to details in the real world. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. This was probably the strangest episode yet.
That's saying something.
And then who got the personality profile this week? Was it the long hair?
It was. Long-haired Banyanya, the handsome boy. Yeah.
And he spends, 2 hours every day or 3 hours every day doing his hair?
Mm.
Something like that.
Okay. Next up on the shortlist, Bono Bono, episode 7, I Got My Own Island.
In which we get a bit of Bono's dad.
We did meet a bit of Bono's dad, who tells his son that a bit of the cliff fell off and now there's an island. And in Bono's head,
These are two separate events.
Yes.
Completely, like, it's just like, whoa, that's weird that two things like that would happen.
And then they get to the cliff and he's like, oh, that's a small island. Can I have it? He looks disappointed and then switches to wanting it.
Like, the dad is acting like a very, like, I guess poor, but trying to please his kid dad. But he's just like, yeah, sure, whatever makes you happy, kid. And Bono's been a total child about it, which is kind of great.
His dad's got like a very slow, stilted talking style.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is very nice.
And they decide they're going to build a house on the island. The first one doesn't go very well.
Because they didn't have enough sticks.
No.
They had like a handful of sticks. It's like, this is probably enough, right? I don't think it's enough. Then they make the house. It's like, this is definitely not enough. It looks like a spit or something they just made.
They find a giant hollowed out tree trunk.
And they have to figure out how to get it to the ocean.
Well, Dan will carry his back. Just put it on his shoulders.
Just roll under my back, whatever. Just roll it up there.
Which is my favourite joke. Just a little bit more. As he's getting squashed.
Slowly crushed by the thing. And,
okay, got it.
Kids are like, are you sure that's okay? Dad's like, yeah, just roll it right on top of me.
Maybe just roll it instead.
Yes.
And the various methods they have where he thinks he can carry it down the cliff.
Yeah.
And then they can't. They both can do it. I like the fact that they managed to lift it, but they kind of look over the cliff. And I was like, I'm not fucking climbing down
there. Drawing of the angle of being on the island looking up at the cliff at them really gets over how difficult it is for them to get it down.
Yeah. It's not that they didn't try, it's that they gave up before they did.
Yes, because it looked incredibly dangerous.
There was a lot of good jokes like that. I liked it when they lowered it in, it fell into the fucking ocean, and they're both standing there on the island and it's like, we did it! Well done! It's kind of like, you totally fucked it up. They're going to claim, yeah, that's a victory. That's a victory, yeah.
They get it out of the sea, and they untie the seaweed, they tied it round it to lower it down, and then it splits into two. And the dad's like, oh, well, you just have to use it like a house like this. And he's like, got them both as like rocking horses. And he's sitting between them.
This is good enough. It's basically like he's starting to get sick of the kid. He's like, this'll do.
Good for the back, Dad.
And then he builds a house for sitting down, a house for when you're lying down and a house for when you're standing up.
And the house when you're lying down is grand.
Yes.
Because, you know, it has a roof over it. And the house when you're standing up is just like half a fucking log and that you just stand up inside. Which Bono is not impressed with.
It's like a screen for changing your clothes, isn't it?
And that's the end of the episode. Yeah.
It continues next week.
Yeah, it seems to be. Because it's like my dad's house or something like that.
Excellent. I shall look forward to that.
We have claimed the island, but now I must keep it. For now.
Yeah, this show's still pretty fun.
Did you guys watch any more Thunderbolt Fantasy?
I watched the third one.
I had already seen the third one, so I could say a little bit about that if you want. It's mostly just talking about what we're going to do from
Like, it's basically like they introduced you cold to the campaign. And now this is them sitting down and saying the various parts and who they're going to need to recruit to go on this D&D adventure. It's like, okay, for part one, we definitely need a necromancer, you guys.
Yeah. Also, as well, as you may have guessed from, you know, from anime rules, you know, what we had up last time with Archer guy about to shoot a grumpy vagrant dude. He's actually shooting one of the bad guys, like, over his shoulder, so it's all fine. They're all pals. Yeah. Yeah. We're talking about what they need to do and who need to get the nearest in. So, yeah, like you said, necromancer first.
They basically go like, okay, there's three, like, deadly bits to get to the enemy base. Part one is it's filled with zombies. There's zombies everywhere. So we need a necromancer to turn off the zombies. And part two is a giant CGI stone giant. Who the weak point is in the neck, but we have an archer, so we're good. Because you can't reach it from the ground, obviously. And I was just like, dude, it's a giant stone monster. I don't think arrows are going to do it.
He's that good.
And what was part three again? The third thing.
But they got to fly there, because it's...
Wasn't it that they walk through a maze, and they need a magic flute or something?
That's...
Because the young guy goes, well, how do they get in and out if it's so fucking difficult? It's like, dude, they have flying dragons. He's like, oh, yeah. I keep forgetting about those somehow.
Yeah. Yeah, they need to go get the it's a magic flute that you play the flute and it echoes and leads you to the maze, which is conveniently in the possession of the necromancer that you gotta go recruit anyway. So they're gonna go rock on down to the swamp or the forest where she lives and see if you can get her on side.
Yeah, he left her a text, but she didn't get back to him, so he's figured, fuck it, we'll just walk down to her house.
I'm sure it'll be okay if we just roll up there unannounced. We get a little thing there with the shrine maiden trying to coax grumpy vagrant guy, and everyone's saying, well, he's got to come along now anyway, but also trying to get him more into the spirit of the things and remind him what's at stake here. And it's like, I don't believe in your mystic mumbo jumbo. No, if magic swords really existed, then why didn't he just use it to kill the bad guys,
Yeah, because if it wasn't a magic sword, he would have just went, I guess it's not a magic sword. I suppose I'll go home. And if it was a magic sword, you would have fucking killed him.
It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I don't know why you didn't use the magic sword.
To be perfectly fair. Not have a, didn't come to any kind of agreement just there. We got a nice little bit outside as well, because we have Guy with Spear.
I'm going to have to write down their names. I keep forgetting. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's just one big long stream of Chinese names. It's hard to keep a track of. Guy with Spear, he was wanting to approach Shrine Maiden, and when we began, Guy was like, what are you doing in the bush? I said, I just wanted to just buy my time here. I was trying to woke up nerve to talk to Shrine Maiden girl, because she's so pretty. I want to do, and he's going off and how lovely she is, and we get some good things where he's kind of flourishing and kind of putting his hand under his chin. Again, another little good showcase of the puppeteering skills going on there. And little kind of funny little bits.
And it's both that, oh, she's lovely and pure. And also, I'd be marrying into a good family. So, win-win. and he's just been a right little shit. I think the main thing she's doing is kind of worrying. It's like, are we the good guys? And like, yeah, we're totally the good guys. Why are we recruiting a necromancer? Isn't that like a bad guy? And the guy who's totally not important, he's just a random wanderer who knows all these people with magical artifacts, is like, no, it's totally cool. Necromancy is just like good magic that looks like it's evil, but it totally isn't. He's standard being super mysterious all the time. Because even when he meets up with the archer and the spearman again, they're kind of like, what do you want us to call you now? I'm going by this name now. That's what that'll do.
Yeah, what's a code name?
It's like he could not be more up to something if he tried.
It's going to turn out he was probably used to be part of the bad guys, and then we saw their evil ways, and he wanted to on their side.
It could be something like that. I haven't watched ahead or anything, but I'm going to assume, that bit where he's totally like, hey, princess, let me have a look at that sword. Is it the guard or the handle? I think it's the guard.
They have the guard of it, I think, right now.
Yeah, it's like, let me have a look at that. And he's like, wow, cool. And then he wraps it up and hands it back to her. I'm going to guess it's in his pocket right now. I'm just going to guess that's a thing. He handed her back a stick or something.
Yeah, she wouldn't think to look now, because her eyes are unworthy to look upon the sacred artifact.
Yeah, yeah. He's up to something. Probably up to something for good, but he's been real tricksy about it. Mm. When they get to the spooky forest of zombies, a different spooky forest of zombies, it's not the bad guys one. The Yuan has left a hologram of herself. And they're all freaking out, and he's like, don't worry, it's just a signpost that where, obviously she's saying from the hologram, if anyone comes in here, I'm totally going to fucking murder you, because I'm a necromancer. And they're like, yeah, it's a pretty spooky signpost, though. You don't think we should leave
it? She says that to everybody, doesn't matter who they are.
That's just her way of saying hello. It's just I don't think that's true.
It's her answering machine message.
Yeah, but that is kind of his reaction. It's like, don't worry, it just plays out like this. It says this to anyone who comes upon the spooky forest. And then they're, as they go into the forest, they're attacked by zombie puppets.
Yeah.
And
sipping, flapping around. again, well, nice by our puppets and, really kind of disheveled and all that. Now, again, is maybe intentionally or unintentionally humorous, I would have kind of flipping and flapping around like that.
I like it. It's like most of the other characters, when they're moving from A to B, they kind of glide. you know, because they're all refined and fancy and shit. But these things are all like twitchy and stuff, and it's a nice different motion for him.
Yeah,
showcasing the different talents, like you said.
Yeah. So that's kind of to split up here, and most of them will go on ahead trying to go with Necromancer, and they'll leave behind Spear Guy and Tri Maiden. And Spear Guy's like, don't worry, Fair Maiden, I'll protect you from these horrid fiends. It's like, no, I'm good. She pulls out her own sword and starts doing like very refined, elegant sword techniques and then chopping down zombies.
Yeah, I mean, like, he's basically like, hey, we make quite the pair, don't we? I mean, like, we should probably team up and shit. I'm just suggesting things and things like that. And she's like, what are you talking about? Because while he's doing all these fancy, and he gets some good moves in, like, she's basically shooting lasers.
Yes.
So,
more importantly.
Yeah, it's kind of like, dude, I think she's killing more zombies than you right now.
Yeah. It was good. I'd like her to take a more active role in the party.
Yeah. Like, if it's the thing of she couldn't beat the main bad guy, that's okay. But as long as she can, you know, beat some dudes, that's all right.
Yeah, I think, like, you know, you watch them more recent than I did, but there are other guys pretty much, like, roll up pretty close to where Necromancer is, or she's aware of the event in the forest. It's like, these guys came in, they're going to invite it. I'm going to fuck their shit up.
Yeah, we forgot to say initially, they all were aware that she's a demon or something. Like, left over from those demon wars they were talking about. And they're kind of like, are we really going to recruit a demon? It's like, no, she's totally a nice demon, you guys. Not all demons are evil. And I was like, I'm pretty sure that that's the definition of a demon, but...
Hey, now. Come on.
Well, that's how everyone else is reacting. Everyone else is kind of freaked out about it, whereas the random vagrant, who's totally not important, is like, no, she's grand. Don't worry about it. She's the friendliest sort of demon.
You gotta get even a chance to be good, doing. Didn't you learn that?
I do like how everyone's super suspect of this character they're trying to recruit.
Yeah. And then, like, a grumpy vagrant guy is just, oh, God. I don't know what to make of all this. Actually, I just noticed that, I just noticed when I watched this one, like, there was, Grumpy Vagrant Guy is voiced by Junichi Suwabe, aka Space Danny. So it was a guy being thrown in to weird events in over his head. That's the guy you want in on it, I think.
In this case, he doesn't want to be in on it, but yeah. As the character, I mean.
Yeah.
Mm.
I'll grant it a bit more regularly. Maybe we can do like one or two.
Maybe we can catch up.
We can do two once a bit just to keep up with it again. So I'd be fine with, you know, putting a bit of this time if you wanted to put it as big of a regular thing. Dwayne, if you're happy to talk about it some more.
Yeah, no, I'm still really enjoying it. I know this episode was very talky, but I still enjoyed it a lot. I had a good enough, had a decent amount of action. I would have liked it a little more, but a good few kind of physical kind of comedy jokes, weirdly enough.
Yeah.
Especially with the young guy. He's actually kind of grown on me as the little annoying shit.
No, he's good.
How many episodes is that due to run for, do we know?
It's probably going to be
13, apparently.
13, I'd imagine.
Yeah, that's about right. I think it's like a standard enough season.
Righty-ho. Now for something I've watched. 91 Days, Episode 7, A Poor Player. In which, well, what happens this week?
It's Wells.
Fango has really cleaned himself up. I got to give him that, you know?
Yes. Yeah, we get classy Fango and his mistress, who's also classed herself up.
He gets annoyed anytime she says something, I've noticed in this episode.
Well, that's because she seems to be taking control, I think.
I imagine she's a better head for business, is the thing, you know? She probably handles the numbers and shit.
But yeah, this episode's all about the Vanetti sibling rivalry coming to a bloody end as Villio spends the entire episode manufacturing fratricide. With a little bit of, I had to look this up, maritricide as a side dish.
Matricide?
There was an I in there when I looked it up.
Well, matrimony is marriage.
Yeah, could be.
So
but maybe mariticide. Not to be confused with matricide. Mariticide is killing of one's husband.
Okay, the other way around.
So
right,
matricide is killing one's wife, then?
No, mother.
Mother. Oh, okay.
Oh, matron. Yeah.
There we go. Hard to get it right.
Words of the week. Just going to show Jojo.
Yeah, so a video does kill somebody, but neither of the two important people. Mm-hmm. He kills Volpe.
Poor old Volpe.
Yeah, because
like Volpe was like they were basically driving past Ronaldo and Frade in a car. Volpe takes a shot at him. It's like, oh man, I got hit in the shoulder. It's like, don't worry about it, Volpe. Shoots Volpe in the chest.
Well, yeah, basically, the crux of it is it looks like they're like trying to kill Nero, but then the kind of big Fio is trying to convince Frate and Ronaldo to speak
sit down
to Nero.
And talk it,
yeah, talk it out. No one needs to get killed. Neither of my brothers need to get killed.
I mean, like, it's one that's generally like a gangster kind of thing as well, because like it's just a waste of fucking resources if we're murdering each other. We're here to make money, but she's actually doing it as like, I want. Because they keep going, I'm doing this for the family. And she's like, what the fuck? Your brothers. Stop. No. That's literally family.
But a video wants Nero to kill his brother, basically.
Yeah. I think he's just trying to. It's like, it's not enough killing him. I need to ruin him.
Yes. Well, they have the little bit in the alley when they're, I think, walking out of that accommodation now. Like, no, Nero's there. Like, if he was waiting for him, yeah, it's like, God, brothers, am I right? Yeah, and the video is like, I had a little brother once, you know, a little bit like that. Maybe I'll let you meet him soon.
One of those kind of things that, if you know the context, is yes. a threat. But
also,
if you don't, it's like...
Earlier in the episode when they were both on the run together, he told him that he was an only child.
Oh, shit, did he?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's brilliant. Maybe, I mean, like, he could take that two ways. Like, I'm starting to trust you, and I'll let you meet my family. Whereas before I told you I was an only child, because, you know.
Yeah. Because there's also a callback to that same episode later on.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, the payoff of revealing that he's a skilled pickpocket in that episode is all paid off this episode. When he palms six bullets.
Brilliant.
Yeah, so basically he tricks Volpe into sparking, basically making it a point of no return.
Where it's, straight up gang war.
Yeah.
And you get the standard thing of the newspaper coming towards the yes. thing.
It's fine. Like,
straight up brother war.
But even then, they think they can get to talk, but then basically, is the gun in the flowers? That get given
No, they have the talk beforehand where they're having the onion soup, isn't it?
No, it's when Fio kills her husband.
It's like, what's this, for Ronaldo had set up that, or something like Fio had set up that Ronaldo and Nero are going to sit down and talk.
Yeah.
But Nero had sent Avilio.
Yes.
Sorry. But flowers, it's like, well, here you go.
You'll be here in a minute. Don't worry about it.
Nero sends these with his apologies.
And it was not only the note that we don't know the specifics of what the note was in the flowers, but it was also her husband pulling a gun out of the fucking drawer and was like, "It's just for protection,
yes,
baby. Don't worry about it."
Yeah, and it's like, and then she shoots him.
Yeah, because she sees which way the wind is blowing, kind of thing.
Yeah. And so. Shipped off before they kill Frate?
I think that's at the very end.
It's at the very end.
It's also revealed that she's actually pregnant. So, and that was going to be the great hope for not uniting the families, like more so what's Ronaldo? The Glacius, is it?
Yeah, because basically they want the Venetti family absorbed into...
Yeah, they want a kind of a puppet family that they just have in this town.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Into the Chicago mob.
Mm-hmm.
And Frate wants to run away at some point. But yeah, basically, it all boils down to a confrontation. And it's like, Nero's like, I'm back in the family now. And he's like, oh, I was the good son. Why do you get to be the bad son and I'm the one who...
Come on, I went to mass and I did everything I was told, and you just did whatever you wanted.
And now I'm going to leave. And then Avilio reveals that he was hiding a gun under his book.
Yeah.
And then Avilio's like, okay, puts the gun back and you two brothers deal with it.
Like, I think it was more so him suggesting that kill yourself. It didn't make him look like he was betraying the younger, betraying the older brother. It made him look like, okay, just kill yourself, younger brother. It's the only way out.
Saying, like, no, do something for yourself. You're going on why you always went on going by doing what you were told. But that's why nobody from the Fed did, because you just do whatever you're told. You gotta do some things for yourself. Well, maybe now at last you're gonna do something for yourself, huh?
Yeah, but again, the way you can read nearly everything he fucking says is you can read it one way and then you can read it completely a different way, as in like, oh, you can kill yourself. Or your brother, I'm just saying.
Yes, but Frate grabs the gun, pulls it on his brother. Nero pulls his... Frate pulls the trigger first, but there's no bullets in his gun because Emilio swiped them.
When he picked up the gun, he goes like, that's pathetic, man. He apparently took the bullets in that fucking... using his pickpockety ways,
So that was a good pull out. Callback rather, and then run credits. Dead brother Nero's back in the family. Avilio's in the family, and then after the credits, Avilio is like, "I'll be your brother now, Nero."
My internet was really bad, and I was wondering, did it actually cut like way too quick there? But it is kind of like, "Hey, I'll be your brother," and I was like, "Well, it's not ended there, is it?" And yes, it totally did.
It's going to be so glorious when Nero realizes the scale of this betrayal that Emilio has carried out.
Oh, God,
because you know Emilio is going to make sure he knows that all this has happened before he kills him.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be great?
Mm. It's kind of great how this guy is kind of our hero, but he's just such a dick. Like, I have very little sympathy for him anymore because he's doing what he's doing in the shittiest way.
Hey, he didn't pull the trigger on Freight. This one, that was just two brothers. I didn't do anything.
Yeah,
but it definitely made that them running away for an episode together. Them, because so much of that paid off in this episode.
Yeah,
the talk about the brothers, the pickpocket. Yeah, the reveal to hit Nero that, oh, maybe I have got a brother after all. Yeah.
Mm. Also, it had your favorite character.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, Ganzo, because when he goes to meet Nero and the very first thing he does is punch Volpe in the stomach.
He just takes him the fuck down.
Well,
so get out of here, old man.
It wasn't Tigre at this time.
Yeah, that's true. They do take the piss out of Tigre several times.
They do make reference, yes, because when Volpe gets shot, he's like, oh, wait till I tell Tigre. It
generally happens to him, and then he fucking gets killed. It's like, yeah, but Tigre survives. That's the deal with him. I hope he's the only guy who fucking walks away from this thing.
That's a new life in Mexico.
Oh, dear. The more I see Ganzo, the more he reminds me of kind of like an anime version of Jack Kirby. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he's got the big eyebrows.
Big eyebrows, kind of heavyset looking dude. He could take you fucking down in a punch. Yeah, he's pretty cool.
Yeah. Really enjoying this show.
Mm.
I assume it's only 12 or 13 episodes.
Yeah, well, you won't.
At this speed, it has to be.
Yeah, and we'll want this to run out of ages. Like, I just want to see.
It's like, and the opening credits, it's like, you know that stuff in the opening credits is going to be part of the story because other things in the opening credits have been. So at some point, somebody gets so pissed off, we're going to get a episode where just the mob is running around killing everybody.
Yeah, there's going to be a few more mob wars by the look of it, but
Is this going to all happen in 91 days? How many days has it been so far?
I don't know. There's no counter. It's not.
The only counter is like episode, like it's like day something on the episode number, and it's like, dude, this isn't going to last 91 days.
Episodes,
they have to introduce more characters. They keep murdering off their main cast.
It'll be like, you know, all three Godfather films, but back to back. And probably a bit of like Once Upon a Time in America thrown in every good measure.
Mm.
Well, yeah, it'd be ripping off entirely if like do a second series of which it's the young Vincent Vannetti.
Well, we kind of know where he started off, like, so, and presumably we'll get to see more of that as it goes on anyway.
But yeah. Do you think, Ganzo talking about making Flate and Nero men, do you think that was taking them to lose their virginity or taking them on that first murder mission?
Ooh.
Hmm. Oh, I thought he just made love to them. Okay. it's difficult to say. It seems to be like, it could also be suggesting that he raised them more so than the father. But yeah, it keeps mixing up the word family as like literal fucking blood relation and family as in the fucking mob that you're in. So, yeah.
I think the first reading you're supposed to take is like, oh, I took you to some prostitutes.
Yeah, sure.
Made you men. But then you think, oh, there's still that fourth guy. So is it making... Yes. Were you? Did you become men when you killed your first people?
Yeah. That could be the case. I'm not. It's not entirely clear, and I guess that's on purpose, though.
Yeah.
But if it's...
Ganzo seems to be like your man's, the head of the family's like right-hand man kind of thing, but he also appears to be really okay with, like, I need to get these brothers back together.
Yeah.
So yeah. He seems to be, I'm not sure which side which role he was playing in that.
Yeah, I don't think he sent the letter, but,
yeah.
If he did, he's faking it very well, but,
I know, right?
Yeah, well, I would think, the first job that Nero killed anybody on was the murder of Avilio's family, but his dad, Visvene, that the now current boss of the Vene family, was on that thing. So that's that true, been his idea. So
yeah, so it's probably the one your brain would immediately go to.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, that's 91 days taken care of. Now it is episode 100. No, episode 7 of Mob Psycho 100.
Whoa, a bit of a time jump there.
Exaltation. I've obtained loss. And this is all about Ritsu's rise to power.
Or fall to power.
Fall of humanity.
As he and Dimple expand his psychic abilities. And it's also the fall from power of Kamuro, the class president.
Student, president.
Body president, yeah.
Mm. And then all, like... and they were trying to mess with my boys, the fucking Body Improvement Club. And I was like, no way, guys. Stop trying to... It's like, oh, I'm going to get these guys banned. I was like, what? They're the nicest guys. How could you... I mean, like, they let these assholes hang out at the club, but that's all right. That's just because they're so kind.
Yeah. Well, it stands for, like, you know, and all that bad... Phoenix Misoka now were trying to get rid of all the delinquents in the schools, bounce back at him, because other delinquents... Bigger, tougher boys from other schools come and beat him up.
Oh, they're all looking for what are they called? Mob?
Oh, a white poison or white tea poison?
Yes.
The shadow leader of Black Vinegar High School.
And we get to see all the other condiment high schools that are around.
Yes.
I think my favorite one was Mayo. I think that was pretty great.
Yes.
I forget which one was which. Actually.
Yeah. The amount of time they say Shiro tea poison in this episode.
They've somehow managed to pick this really cool name for Mob, and they're all pretty happy with it. It's like, yeah, it's the tough guy name. You gotta have a tough guy name.
The mistaken identity is a big recurring theme in this episode.
Again, as I was said, I was trying to say it last week, you know, again, because of the comic it's based on and the artists involved, everybody has almost the same goddamn face in this comic. But then you're using that when they're cutting between Mob and Ritsu, because you're seeing it had the kind of same face, but it's a different kind of context and framing to it.
Yeah, yeah. Like, Mob generally looks kind of like vacant.
And we do get the idea that the vice president, Tokugawa, is trying to put a stop to this hunt for the delinquents and the framing of delinquents that's going on.
Yeah, I mean, like, initially he was kind of presented as a baddie when he was trying to shut down the psychic club.
Yeah.
But it's more so, like, when he sees something going wrong, like the psychic club or these assholes framing a bunch of people, he's just like, that's not on.
Yeah, and Ritsu, what's his line? I got bored of my personality, which is why he's behaving like this.
Hmm.
And also, the other reason is that the guilt he feels is what's increasing his psychic powers. So.
Guilt and frustration and anger, all the worst feelings, yeah.
And also, meanwhile, Mob meets some con artists.
Yeah.
Like a little mini episode in the middle of it, yeah. I mean, it relates to the stuff that's happening, but yeah.
Yeah, so particularly, I'm pretty sure there's a name for that type of con. Because I've seen it in other places before.
There probably is a specific name for it. Not specifically the
It's basically, the art one, but, yeah. You trick somebody into thinking they've broken something of value.
Yeah. It's like sort of an insurance fraud. You pretend to get hit by a car. Like, oh, my hospital costs.
Yeah, it's similar, but without taking it to court, trying to squeeze the money out of them there and then, kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, that's what Reagan does.
Yes, Reagan goes straight for the insurance type.
He shows up. It's like, oh, psychological damages, that'll be 1 million yen, please.
And that is a really great device of him being the voice of reason.
It's weird, like, he's an asshole prick who's using mob, but he's not as bad as these guys. Oh, dear. Yeah, it's kind of like the upper limit of it's like, well, how evil does he have to be before we're like straight up those guys are bad guys? Because so far Reagan's kind of like our hero in this case. He comes in and saves fucking mob from these guys.
Well, except of course it actually was a cursed vase.
Yeah, they're getting lunches like, oh, by the way, mob, good job with the whole like psychic display about there, we spooked them good. Oh, that wasn't you, master. Oh, okay.
Oh, he's like, oh, you didn't see it? And he goes, oh, yes, I did. And that's the end of scene, end of conversation.
He just starts stuffing his face. It's just like, yep, can't talk anymore, eating.
We also get Teru show up as Ritsu realizes his power is not as powerful as he thought. Mm-hmm. And also we learn that Teru's hair is now at 150%.
It's a massive haystack on his head. It's pretty great. It was a nice reveal because it was kind of like, you know, cropping him at the fringe and stuff is like, because you see the people go, oh my God, look at that guy's hair. And you're expecting to see the bald patch. They're all taking photos of him with their phones across the street.
Yes, because he's like suddenly, because before they were interested in Ritsu beating up one of these gang leaders.
Mm.
And then that's far more interesting to see in this guy hair. And of course, Ritsu thinks that he's got all this psychic power because his brain's so big.
Oh, that was pretty great. Yeah, it's the one time he kind of like, it's the one time in the episode where his being able to beat these people up with his psychic power kind of comes back to him because he thinks, I can totally take this guy. And Dimple's like, dude, you fucking can't take this guy. Yeah. Just walk away. Just walk away.
And of course, Terry is now with the same opinion of mob that you shouldn't be using your psychic powers to.
Yeah, he's been kind of, not converted, but he's been convinced that that's the right way to do things. Yeah.
And so basically gives him a small display of power, just shaking his hand. Which fairly well sends the message.
Please to meet you.
Question. Was the scene where he's displaying his powers to the psychic foundation thing after this?
Can't recall.
I was going to go back there to show off to them to make himself feel big again. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Again, like a barrage of things happening now. He's being the enforcer of the like student council president, and he's doing that. He basically goes in there and starts like just bending spoons into strange shapes. And it's like, I don't think I'll be going back here again. See you guys.
I think he only went back there just to go, like, fuck you, I have psychic powers now, kind of thing. Mm. Yeah, he's being a real little dick about it. You know what I mean? Because he's saying, like, I could twist your car up if you'd like.
Oh, yes.
And he's like, what?
But yes, this public display of psychic powers, though, brings the attention of a mysterious hooded figure that we saw last week who seems to believe that Ritsu is mob and he's going to kidnap him.
Which, again, I mean, like, they have the same last name, so.
Yes.
And also, he is using psychic powers right now. And he's talking to someone on the phone. Like this is part of their plan or something like that. So something bigger going on.
Yeah, so he's watching as this final confrontation shows up with all these gang leaders. Terry's watching and then Mob shows up right at the end.
Mm.
Sees his older brother surrounded by all these people lying all over the alleyway.
That's got to be the best animated scene this episode, right? Just those guys getting flung left, right, center. Mm.
I just that one where like, you know, the big guy in the red tracksuit was like cracking his look, and then he just goes, this gets pulled down, like stiff as a board, face first into the concrete.
Fucking hell, like,
But yeah, it's very claustrophobic and heavy with atmosphere, this episode.
Yeah. I think that's why it culminated in the alley, because that's like the perfect fucking way to get that tension across fully, you know?
Yeah. A lot of claustrophobic tension this week between this 91 days and that cat in Banania.
It's preying upon people's like deepest, darkest fears.
Yes.
Make them anxious. Yeah. But it's good. Like, this episode seemed like it was rocketing through probably a lot of material at once.
Like a lot of different short bits. But that's what I was thinking.
If we were trying to get to, like, you know, a more important arc, should we say, a bit sooner. But also I feel as well, like for Ritsu, this is like a lot of things he's kind of keeping like bottled up for most of his adolescent life, and you know? I feel like they're all overflowing now with the discovery of those, of this newfound ability, and it just kind of coincides with kind of this outbreak of frustration and anger that he's feeling right now.
Yeah, it's basically like what we had been, because we weren't sure what initially the ticker that Mob had was raising to, but now that we know what that is, it's basically Ritsu just filling up on that. You know, it's allowing himself to just get that filled as quickly as possible, which is, it kind of helps that it's all crammed into one as well, you know? I don't know, a similar kind of theme, I would have thought, or structure, I suppose.
Yeah, well, psychic power is based upon feeling. You know, it's often it's not a good feeling, really.
Mm.
Yeah, I think some people said there was in the comments that they'd skipped some elements of the story.
Like side stuff or kind of more jokey bits, I imagine. Because this was quite a serious episode overall. There was, besides Mob getting tricked, wasn't really many jokes in it.
But yeah, Hulk continues to be highly enjoyable.
Mm.
Yeah.
Not much more to add. I think that's everything. Yeah, that's everything. That wraps up this week's episode of Let's Go JoJo. Be back next week to hang with the Let's Go gang. And in the meantime, check out our regular podcasts at secretofthesailormadness.blogspot.com and dynamitingthebrain.com. Goodbye.
Oi.
Take care now. Bye-bye then.